Hello, everybody. Ewan Spence here, ready to bring you another exciting, madcap, adventurous, dangerous edition of everything that's happening in the Symbionorus world. Joining me this week, or as they like to describe it, trying to hold me back, we have Rafe Blanford.
Hi, Ewan.
Steve Litchfield.
Hi there.
And joining us from Intermobile, it's Stephen Contes-Iadescu.
Hello, and moi from Finland.
I was Finland just now. Anyway, Stefan.
It's absolutely gorgeous. The summer has come. The sun is up. The temperature is above 5 degrees Celsius, and we're rocking.
Rude. And I know you say you're rocking, but how is your complete disaster at Eurovision went down? Because, quite frankly, you sent a band this year from Finland. They sent a band called Steel Reinforced Concrete, and they didn't score anything.
I'll be completely honest. I haven't had a TV for the past 24 months, so I have no idea what's going on.
Well, that's great, because, Stefan, the big news, and Rafe has the amazing big business news that you might have missed.
Yeah, unbelievably, despite it being a week after iPhone 2 was announced, Nokia is still in business. I mean, can you believe that?
We try.
But yes, the iPhone kind of dominates the news cycle, as it were. But let's strip that away and throw it out the window for at least 5 minutes and talk about something else that's Apple-related in our little bit of news. Rafe, Missing Sync, popular package for other platforms, finally has come to Symbian.
Yeah, that's right. For those who don't know, Missing Sync is basically a third-party tool that's been popular on the Mac platform for syncing with mobile devices, and it's now available in beta for both UIQ and S60 devices. And essentially it lets you sync from Apple applications like Address Book, iCal, iPhotos and the rest onto your Symbian based device. And so, for example, you can use it to sync your contacts and calendar across, but it will also do photos, and it'll do it in both directions, so you can put photos onto the device and take it off the device. It also supports video, and it also supports a number of third-party software on Mac, for example Entourage, which is the Outlook equivalent for Mac from Microsoft. I think this is important simply because there haven't really been very good sync tools for the Mac OS on Symbian device before. Nokia do provide a few in the form of iSync profiles and media transfer, but not wrapped up into one nice package like this. And it's even truer for UIQ, where there are even fewer options. It is, of course, you know, as a third-party piece of software, you will be charged for it. But if you want to have a smooth sync solution for about, I think it's $40, you'll be able to get this with Missing Sync. It is in beta at the moment, so you may want to wait for it to go into final version. But if you want to go and have a play with it, it's available from missingsync.com.
And we're about 3 minutes in, and we can turn and go, Steve, back in your day, third-party synchronization packages were the only things available for PDA owners, weren't they?
I guess so. I always used to stick to the built-in Cywin. With the old Cyan Palm Tops, we always have to get the phrase Cyan Palm Tops into every podcast.
And there we go. There's our check to David Potter. Thank you very much.
We're very, very notable, though, that we mentioned in the last podcast that I wasn't on, but you mentioned MobileMe from the Apple team. And Stefan's absolutely right in the back channel here, where he mentions these days you really do need to have some kind of online component so that you're not entirely tethered, even wirelessly, to your own desktop. You have this presence in terms of all your PIM data and your essential information, whether it's on Google, somewhere on the cloud, somewhere on the internet, so that you can access it and synchronize it to your mobile, to your desktop, and access it from anywhere. And I think that kind of presence is vital these days. So the Missing Sync is a good first step, but there's a long way to go, especially in terms of sync solutions. And I think 2008 will be a very active year for that.
Stefan, I think you've got some strong views on this. Yep.
Well, the fact that there is no online component, I know that that's not going to kill it for a lot of the mass market, but for people who actually use their mobile phone as their main calendaring and PIM tool, not having that ability to access their information on any sort of device, whether it's a computer you find in a library, an online cafe, or even someone else's cell phone, if you don't have that, then it just isn't interesting. And honestly, that price tag is kind of high just to have synchronization software on your phone. OVSync is supposed to have this, but then again, OVSync isn't really here yet, so we'll just have to wait some more.
I certainly agree with all of that, although I would point out, as Stefan just said, you know, for the mass market, desktop sync is still the primary way to go. And given that there isn't a solution for Mac, I suspect this will be quite popular with a number of people. But ultimately, I mean, I would agree it's all going to go into the cloud and we'll be syncing that way. And indeed, if you're a Mac user, you know, you can already do that through SyncML with any of the SyncML services that are out there, because the Macs have quite good support for that. But I do think it has a place for things like photos, for example, where, you know, if you're transferring several tens of megabytes worth of photos onto or off your phone, given, you know, there aren't necessarily universal flat rate data, and even if there is, it can be quite slow. I think there's actually still a large part for the PC mobile sync to play in multimedia transfers, and that's, I'm thinking of images, music and video there. And so I think Missing Sync does more in some ways than Nokia's PC suite does there, in terms of all being wrapped in one application. You know, Nokia are coming along with things like Music Sync, and there's Nokia Photos. But from what I've seen of Missing Sync running on Windows Mobile, it's actually wrapped into the whole experience in one application. So I think there's a lot to be said for that still, particularly for multimedia sync. But yes, I'd agree with all of you for the context and calendar stuff. You know, ultimately, a couple of years' time, that's all going to be in the cloud.
I think it's just great. So the back channel, which we really must do one of these live so everybody can join in the back channel one day. Stefan's just popped in and said, whoever it is, beep there, put your phone in silent mode. I'm just going to actually bring it up. It was a text from my provider, which is Orange, who said, we've reviewed your phone usage and the good news is you're on your best plan possible, which isn't surprising, as I'm on a plan that they cancelled 5 years ago because it was too good value for money for the users and I never changed off it. Ha 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 ha. But anyway, things that have been changing over the last week or so, there's been some movement on the N-Gage. We now have the client built in to new N81s that are rolling out the factory, which is a good move. We had a nice big in-depth article on the Kido N-Gage is getting the icon already on the handset rather than trusting people to download the root. Getting people to download applications is hard, even if you're Nokia with a gaming client. And the other point, of course, is we've got another title coming out, which is the N-Gage Sims, or more specifically, Sims Pets. Steve, you're one of these people that, because you have these hedgehogs that move around your floor as little robots, you're into these virtual pets and everything, aren't you?
Well, more specifically, my daughter is, but I had a passing acquaintance with...
Yes. Yeah, that's my excuse.
I had a brief look at it this morning. The Sims 2 Pets looks pretty slick. I have to say, it's not quite in the same class as Nintendogs on the... Nintendo DS, but it's a pretty damn good try for a quarter VGA screen on a smartphone. Chris from All About Symbian is going to do a full review over the next day or so. So, well, I guess by this time that this podcast goes up, the review should be live.
Indeed, yeah. And finally, in our little short bits of news before we hit the elephant in the room, I'd love to be able to read out Stefan's one-line answer to this next news post, but I'll leave him to be a little more eloquent in his speech. Stefan, we've had an analyst provide his assessment of what the bill of materials on an iPhone would be.
Well, the last statement I made about an analyst on my EIQ channel got me into some heat, so I'm going to refrain
what,
from
with
copying...
Val Kilmer and Robert De Niro and everything.
Exactly. We were in the backseat of a BMW with a rocket launcher, and it wasn't really going too well driving backwards in France. But the analyst, who I believe was from, here we go, from Portelligent, says that the iPhone 3G will have a bill of materials under $100, which as...
Yeah, Rafe is laughing hysterically because according to this same analyst, the first iPhone had a bill of materials of 170. Now,
the analyst is saying he's saving $70 and adding a GPS and a 3G circuitry in there.
Yeah. Of note, it's an American analyst, so maybe that's why the math came out like that. But... the fact that surprises me is he actually can predict this without having touched one or torn one apart. And we all know that when the iPhone 3G comes out, within 4 hours, there will be pictures of it on the internet, dissected, smashed, broken, whatever. And we will see some figures more accurate than this guy, who is getting a lot of press for pulling a number out of his bum. I mean, let's just be serious.
No, not bum, the bill of materials.
Oh, okay. Thanks for correcting me.
I think that should save you from the legal eagles out there. Steve, bill of materials.
Just one comment. I've no idea what the hardware bill of materials is for an iPhone 3G. Goodness sake, Apple have got pretty serious buying power. But it's not just about the hardware bill of materials these days. In the old days, you could just make a phone. You'd design it. You'd build it. You'd factor in the research. Okay, research is done. Let's ship it. Let's make some profit and get the money back. These days, there are huge ongoing costs in terms of running the services, the app stores, the firmware upgrades, whether you're Apple or Nokia or Sony Ericsson. There are huge ongoing costs. So it's not just about the hardware. It's about all the human resources that go into supporting a product and continually improving, especially as we're talking about smartphones, which, let's face it, they're complex systems that need continual tweaking and fixing.
Okay, Rafe?
Yeah, just to add to what Steve said, if I'm being really, really generous, you might just be able to get to $100 if you're just talking the absolute cost of hardware. Although, to be honest, with the 8 gigabytes of flash memory in there, the 3G chipset, the Bluetooth stuff, the GPS, I sincerely doubt it. But if you then add all the licensing costs that go along with using certain chipsets, particularly 3G, but also elsewhere in the device, then there's just no way you'll be able to get it under $100, in my opinion. We've talked a long time in the Symbian world about getting things under $100, and the key to that has been doing it as single chip devices, and obviously the iPhone is not a single chip device. There's pretty much no way it could be under $100, even allowing for the fact that some of the hardware doesn't measure up. You know, if you look at a device like the 6120, which Nokia has been selling for sort of around 200 euros or so, it's just possible that that device now, later on in its lifetime, taking into account economies of scale, is approaching $100, but there's no way something like the iPhone will be getting close to that.
Yeah, and also if we look at the number of, it's going to be around $700 to actually buy out of contract, if that's going to be even possible. If you assume that 50% markup is going to the person who sells it, it takes you to $350, and 50% profit for the people who are doing the distribution, that leaves you with a buying from the factory cost of about $175, $180. But remember, out of Apple's profit, you still have to take on board things like the development cost. This wasn't cheap to design.
I think you're being generous with the margins for the retailers and the distributors there. I suspect more is in the Apple profit pouch, and the distributors are getting, the retailers getting a much smaller bit off the top there.
There we go. All about Symbian, piercing the financial cloud of Apple. And piercing Rafe before he waffles on about 10 minutes about manufacturers of scale, which will be available as an additional course for all of you doing business studies at Cambridge University next year for $500. There we go. Right.
Thank you,
okay.
Ewan.
Well, you said you wanted to, the extra money. Anyway, we're done. Right. Let's move on to topics. Phones. The Z10, which sounds like a new BMW model. Fast, slick, room for one person. Not a lot of memory required to run it. Does that hold true for this model as well? Who's going to tell us about the Z10? Rafe, why don't you start?
I'll start with the Z10. It's the second UIQ phone from Motorola.
I just thought you were going to say it's the second UIQ phone. They've built two.
Well, no, Sony Ericsson also build UIQ phones, if you remember. But it's the second one from Motorola of the current generation, of course. If you go further back, you find all the A series, which were the 3G phones that looked like a brick, felt like a brick, and really behave like bricks as well, basically. But of the present generation of UIQ phones, we've had the Z8 and now the Z10. They're both the banana slider phones, and Motorola aren't really marketing these as smartphones. They're marketing them as sort of high-end feature phones with whizzy video capabilities, both in recording videos and being able to watch videos. There's a iTunes sort of like store for downloading the latest movies onto the Z10, but there's a very limited selection and the user experience isn't all that great, but we'll sort of maybe talk about that in a future insight when we've had a chance to really try it out. But I know Steve's been trying out some of the video creation on the Z10, so what do you think of that, Steve?
I'm quite impressed by the Z10 in a way. If I hadn't seen something like an N93 or N95, if this had just come on the market, or maybe just take myself in a time machine back a year and a half, 2 years, I think I'd be quite impressed. The video creation. It's called a VGA, 30 frames a second, but it's quite smooth. The audio is not bad, nice and loud. There's a top quality video editor built in, which they were demoing at the last year's smartphone show, but they wouldn't let anyone play with. But I'm playing with it now on the Z10 that Rafe's kindly handed me for a couple of weeks. Top video editor, so it's really easy to stitch videos, photos, music together. The biggest problem I would say at the moment is the fact that we've only actually got what I'm guessing is a pre-release hardware and pre-release software. The speed of the interface, the awkwardness of the interface, not just in terms of design, but for example, there's an S60-like task manager. You press and hold the applications button, and it shows a list of running applications, running tasks. It takes about a second for that to appear, and then it takes a second per app to scroll down that list, and another 3 seconds for the application you want to switch to appear. This is Symbian OS. This is supposed to be lightning-fast multitasking. So something's not quite right on our review unit, and I hope to get to the bottom of this before we go into too much detail in terms of a text review and all about Symbian. But overall, the Z10 is it's sort of almost die-cast metal. It's very nicely constructed, very nicely built. I much prefer it to some of Sony Ericsson's previous generation of UIQ3 phones, I have to say. Having a proper D-pad helps a lot. It's almost S60-like in places in terms of the interface, just a few rough edges here and there. But I've got loads of notice points I want to make for my smartphone show review, and I'll certainly feed back into Ewan for who's going to be doing the bulk of the All About Symbian review.
So, Steve, I remember on the Scion 3MX, you had to do Scion Control Shift to switch it into fast mode. I take it you've tried it like that, and it's not some bit of legacy Cybo code kicking in the background.
Yeah, I tried pressing green, star, red 5, and then kicking myself in the shins at the same time, but it didn't seem to make any difference. So I've tried various other hot sequences. I think it's a pre-production firmware, and I'm hoping to get some clarification from Motorola on that.
Stefan, I dread to ask, but can you sum up the Z10 in one word?
Oh, boy. If I were to choose any word, unimpressive. I'm just going to say unimpressive, not what I said in the back channel, because we might have some children in the audience.
What, you were going to call it Barney? Okay, right, I'm going to pick up Rafe. Sony Ericsson do make UIQ phones, it's quite right, Rafe, and we saw some Sony Ericsson phones this week, but strangely enough, in a mix of gaming phones, Cybershot phones, regular feature phones, Overgun, we didn't see a UIQ release, did we?
That's right, I went along to the Sony Ericsson launch party in London, and actually had a look at the C905, which is the camera phone to which you refer, and it's actually an unbelievable 8 megapixels. Now, I think we'll leave aside for now the debate over whether 8 pixels is really a good idea on a mobile phone in terms of the sensor size and stuff like this. To be fair to Sony Ericsson, it does use a bigger sensor size than previous mobile phones in the C series from Sony Ericsson. And it's actually not using a CMOS sensor, it's using a CCD sensor.
That's very good. That new CCD is much, much better in terms of picture quality. If you remember the, was it the Sony Ericsson P990, I think, had a CCD sensor. And as a result, the photo was really, really lovely colours and very, very good detail.
So there you go. You have it from the expert Steve there. And, you know, they also have some pretty nice software on board. So, for example, the new feature on the C905 is exposure control. And what it actually does is take three separate images and it underexposes one. One has its normal and one is overexposed. And then it combines those together. So in images where you've got lots of backlighting, for example, you're taking a group photo and there's sunshine in the background or through a window, it will actually construct an image consisting of the three previously captured images so that you get different areas of the image are exposed in different ways. This is actually a very effective way of creating a much better photo. So, for example, in the case of, you know, a portrait with the sun in the background, the sun won't dominate the picture and you'll get the people come out nice and clear. It's got the same facial recognition stuff as in the previous C series, which is the C902, I believe. And all in all, actually, the software on board the on the phone is pretty impressive. The camera application is, I would say, amongst the best you'll get on a mobile phone. However, it is still a feature phone, and so there's some pretty interesting limitations in terms of getting stuff off the phone. For example, there's no direct upload to Flickr. However, it does support DLNA or UPnP, so you can view the images on your media server or on your Xbox, or in the case of Sony Ericsson, what they were promoting was the PlayStation 3. And there's also Wi-Fi in the phone. That's obviously needed for the UPnP. So, you know, actually it has many of the features of a top-end N-series device. There's also a GPS. It does geotagging. But as, like I say, it's a closed device. So I was rather hoping to see a UIQ device like this. But it's, you know, it does rather crystallize the debate of feature phone versus smartphone when we're seeing all these kind of features come into feature phones. But we'll leave that aside for another day. Yes,
the scuttlebutt was there was going to be one there.
That's right. There were some rumours indicating that there were going to be some UIQ devices, one of which was going to be a P series and one of which were thought to be in the G series range. However, neither of those have appeared, so we're not really quite sure what's going on. There may be some more news on this next week, and we'll keep you informed. But UIQ does appear to be having a bit of a torrid time of it at the moment, in terms of we were expecting by this time of the year quite a few more devices to come out from both Sony Ericsson and Motorola. I wouldn't write them off altogether, but I suspect both Motorola and Sony Ericsson are thinking about how they can best promote UIQ and, you know, consolidating their resources in terms of being able to compete with the likes of Apple and, of course, Nokia and also HTC. So I suspect in the future we may not see some new devices immediately, although, of course, there's a chance they'll still come out. But they'll probably be working hard on the next gen, on the new hardware platform. And I wouldn't be that surprised if we saw some joint announcements from Motorola and Sony Ericsson for devices in the future. But we'll have to wait and see. I don't think it's really missing out all that much, because the devices that were rumoured to exist, which were codenamed Paris and Bebe, were apparently basically just redresses of existing hardware. In the case of Bebe, it was basically a G900 in a different case. In the case of the P5i, or Paris as it was known, it was probably just a P1i in a slider form factor, maybe with some extra bits of hardware in the camera department, but none of that was very clear. And of course, these are all rumours that you can't necessarily attach much truth to, although it does seem that they were postponed or cancelled quite late in the day. But we'll keep you informed on the status of UIQ phones in future podcasts.
Naturally, other rumours are available, and the value of our rumours do go down as well as up.
We don't do rumours, do we, at All About Symbian, though?
No.
We much prefer the Tusk album, don't we, Steve?
Another 70s reference.
Hey, there we go. You can look that one up on Wikipedia, kids, or Rafe, as we like to call him. Right, Fonzie did come out this week, or last week, as it were, because we're recording in time, space, wibbly wobbly stuff. Nokia's enterprise devices in the E71 and the E66. Nokia rather wisely decided not to invite me down from Scotland to the launch event and the 29th floor of a tower block in London. Oh, that would have been fun. Steve and Rafe were there. Steve, you left Reading. What was it like?
Oh, it was wonderful. I didn't mind being high up, and I could see a glorious view of London while I was wined and dined by Nokia with producing a wide variety of foods with mustard smeared all over them. The devices themselves, though, were a highlight. I like the way that Nokia have revamped their E-series. The whole launch event itself was rather on the small side. I understand that GoPlay last year was much, much bigger, but they were really on message. Every journalist who attended got to take away an E71, which sounds an awful lot like bribery, but I'm behind this sort of thing. If you remember, another reference to Cyan, I know, but back in the old days, back in when I was a lad, Cyan used to give every journalist who came to every press launch a free device, and it wasn't bribery. The idea was that journalists would take them, use them day to day, and actually get to understand the platform, understand the strengths, and then write about them in an informed way. And
I remember that cocked up when they had Stephen Fry announce the Revo, and he was there emceeing the event. Excuse us, guys. And he did the whole presentation of the MC and everything, and Potter came on and introduced it. And then he turned to him and says, "So does this one sync with the Mac yet?" Then, and David Potter had to go, "No."
Yeah, and then I asked about what happened to the backlight, and he said, "Oh, it hasn't got one."
Strangely enough, the circuitry for the backlight is there in the Revo. They just don't have a backlit screen. If you put a backlight element from a 5MX behind a Revo, the backlight works on control space.
Continued in Scion Retro Podcast number 32, available at scionretropodcast.com. Back to the E71. In the meantime, the E71...
I'm off to go, Daddy.
E71 and E66 were announced. You'll see all details on the site. There's my comprehensive review and loads and loads of Q&A. My overriding impression of the E71, I'm sure Rafe will chip in on the E66 in a moment, the C71 is a great, great refresh. I'm sorely tempted to use it as my main device because it's just got everything in the one package. It's just that the camera side of things is not quite up to the N95, and I'm just not quite sure I could to take that slight leap downwards from N95, N82 specification. But everything else about the E71 is stunning, from the speed of the interface, the keyboard is wonderful, the build quality feels like you could drop it on concrete 20 times and it would still work perfectly. So very impressed with that. Rafe, do you want to try the E66?
Yes, the E66, it basically has exactly the same features as the E71 in terms of, you know, GPS, Wi-Fi, S60, third edition feature pack 1, some of the same software tweaks, but it's in the slider form factor. The slider form factor, of course, for the E-series was first seen with the E65. Probably not all that well known that there's been about 10 million E-series devices sold, of which about 5 million have been E65s. So the E65 has actually been a very successful product for Nokia, so I'm not surprised at all to see a follow-up to it. And I can only really say that the E66 is an even better product. It's got a slightly bigger screen. The slide is very, very, very well built. The build quality on the E-series, as always, is very impressive. The interesting thing about the E65 is it actually has more of a stylish feel to it than any other E-series device I can think of. It has sort of light-up keys on the control cluster that are sort of flush with the surface, which I'm sometimes not convinced about, but I do think it does look very nice in this case, and I think the E65 is, you know, a real looker as a business device goes when you compare to what else is out there on the market. Indeed, Nokia said that in their initial market research it does look like it's going to be very popular, particularly with females, but also just with people looking for a voice-centric business device. So I have to say I was really impressed with both of the devices, and the E66 is extremely capable, and in one sense you could see it as being, you know, broadly equivalent to the sort of N95, but for business users. It has okay multimedia functionality. It certainly doesn't measure up necessarily to the N series, but it's still some pretty good stuff in there, certainly for the music, perhaps less so for the camera and the video. But it's an extremely strong all-round device, I feel, and I think it'll appeal to a lot of consumers as well who don't necessarily expect brilliant camera. It's certainly good enough, in my opinion. So if you're not an N-series user, you're going to come to something like the E66 and you'll actually think, wow, the multimedia capabilities in this is pretty good. I'd also just want to say something on the E71. I think
Wait. Whoa. You can't have three rants in a row, Rafe.
I can't have three rants in a row. Okay.
You can't have an rant. No.
Back to Stephen,
no.
So I guess.
Back to Steve. I mean, I'll just point out, I think it's lovely because it looks a bit like the 7650. But I'm amazed that Nokia seem to be turning into Swiss Tony. Go, it's a little something for the ladies. Steve?
I know nothing about little somethings for the ladies. I'm sorry. That's just not my style. I should hasten to add I'm happily married before anyone reads too much into that. Anyway, just one point on the E71. The keyboard reminds me so much of the old Trios, the Trio 270s, which I championed for ages in the early 2000s.
And you championed, I think, the Trio 90.
I championed, well, not the 90, but the 270 and the 180. But my point here is not just talking about keeping the sales within the Nokia world. I think the E71 is going to appeal to a lot of people moving across from BlackBerrys and Palm Trios. And there are a lot of people moving from Palm Trios now that Palm OS has been sinking into the mire for the last couple of years. So I think there'll be a lot of people switching platform to use the E71, and it'll sell very well indeed.
Stefan, do you want to get in before Rafe draws breath again?
I sort of have to. the E71, I've actually played with one for a while now. It's been in the offices for about a month, and I'm very proud that I can talk about it now. It really is the small tweaks that were done to S60 that really make the E-series stand out. Things like contact search from the home screen, the revamped calendar interface. There was a lot that Nokia tried to accomplish with the new E71 and E66 that unfortunately couldn't have happened, but the amount of things that they did was just extremely huge. And the E71, I think, will be a huge flagship product. But of course, the E66 will sell more because people think the whole QWERTY keyboard on your cell phone makes you look a bit geeky, as we should say. The E66,
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go with Ewan on this. They did make the product look a bit more feminine than I was hoping, and they're starting to copy over some practices from the N-Series lineup, which means the shiny plastics, which, yes, it does help sell in the shops, but personally, I'm not a huge fan of it. I still think that the E61i is the premier E-Series phone. It's a man's phone. It looks like it could kill people on the highway.
So Steve, have you got an E61? An E61i?
I have a 61, I have a 61i, I have two E61.
Definitely happily married, you can tell that, can't you, Stefan? Right, Rafe, we'll go and get some more coffee, carry on.
Well, I just wanted to say about the 71, which I don't think is immediately obvious when you look in the pictures, it really is very small and very thin. And actually, I'm sitting here with my N95 sitting next to it, and actually it really, the size is comparable, I would say, while the 71 is marginally taller and marginally wider. Of course, when you open up the slide of the N95, it gets a lot bigger and it's also a lot thicker, so the E71 fits into the pocket, you know, a lot better. And I'm just really impressed by how Nokia have managed to squeeze so much into a relatively small form factor. There's a 1500 milliamp hour battery in the back, and if you take the battery out of the device, you appreciate just how much is just how small the rest of the device is. The battery takes up, I would say, anything up to two-thirds of the volume of the phone. And of course, with 1500 milliamp hours, that means it's going to last at least 2 days, even for pretty heavy users. And for moderate users, I would imagine you'll be able to get 3 or 4 days out of this device.
So it shouldn't be a problem if you hammer it overnight, then.
No, it shouldn't be.
I think you could probably take it on a mobile mashup in London, Ewan, and you'd be hammering it away at it, coding, sending messages all night, all the next day, and you still have 2 or 3 bars left. It's very impressive.
Luke, yeah, I'm just back from the last hack event, okay? Don't talk to me about taking phones into bars and demonstrating how much power they have. I got me into so much trouble last night. As Stefan will attest. Right, I think we've done it. It's been a pretty busy week there, guys. Are the E-Series phones your highlights? The sort of thing that stands out the most, or has there been anything else that we've missed recently?
Well, as always, I can keep talking about the E-Series devices. That's the thing that's caught my eye this week. We haven't really talked at all about all the enterprise side of it, but it does have all the push email, and there's a much more rounded suite for all the businesses. Those who want to remote lock or remote wipe their devices, yep, that's supported in IntelliSync and Exchange, and it's actually also supported on the personal level. I think this is pretty nice feature. You can send a secret SMS to your phone, and it will remotely lock it or indeed remotely wipe it. And that's something we haven't really seen on S60 at the consumer level, unless you talk about third-party software. So there's all sorts of details and bits about the E-Series that we haven't really mentioned on the podcast, but do have a look at the content on the website, because there's loads there about it. But my conclusion about sort of both E-Series devices would be that if you're not obsessed by having a really great camera on the device, i.e. something that's really multi-megapixels, if you're happy with good enough, then I would really recommend taking a very close look at these devices, because they really are very good indeed.
My highlight. Oh, go on, Stefan.
For me, I would have to say, if they came out a year earlier, I would have been highly impressed. But the thing is, somebody shoved an N95 in my hands the second I got off the airplane in Finland. And at first I was like, you know, this whole N-Series thing, I'm not really sure. I don't really need a camera this powerful. I don't need all this in my phone. But I found that I take images of things I want to remember now instead of writing it down. So therefore, my requirement for a QWERTY was gone. And you may not need or want a high-spec camera in your phone, but when you have one in your phone and you start using it extensively, it's extremely hard to go back. So they're awesome devices, but like Steve said, if you don't need a high-spec, they're fine.
So there we go, Stefan's N95 contributing to the impending explosion of dementia in Finland in about 20 years' time. Steve!
Yeah, my highlight of the week, I guess, would just be a statistic that kind of stuck in my head and an awareness. I think a couple of insights ago, we chatted about the differences between sort of feature phones and smartphones and what makes a smartphone smart. And I was postulating that at some point, they'll just all be called phones. I think that whole syndrome is accelerating. And just looking at some statistics, in terms of Nokia's selling phones worldwide, they sell 450 million per year. And of course, a lot of those are Series 40, but Series 40 version, I think version 5 now they're up to, and that's going to start including Nokia Maps. And of course, you've got things like Google Maps and Google Mail and some pretty high function Java applications that can be loaded on almost instantly the moment you get it. So in a very real sense, you can consider things like some of the latest Series 40 phones as smartphones, in that they do out of the box almost everything most people want to do. So with that, the whole stats about the smartphone industry and which devices do you include, which do you don't, I think is a misnomer. And just to leave people for this Insight podcast with the stat that Apple are aiming for the sake of argument, for 10 million iPhones total ever sold. They'll exceed that quite comfortably, I think, especially with their new subsidized model. But that's 10 million or 15 million ever. Nokia sell 450 million every year. And an awful lot of those are very, very capable devices. And I'd like to explore this in the future Insight, and we can go into some more detail.
And admittedly, Nokia sell at least 24 of them in North America. Well, that's leaving into another podcast. It's time to say thank you all out there for listening. As always, your comments are welcome. Do send them to rafe@allaboutsymbian.com. Don't bother CCing me because, as you can tell, I'm completely uncontrollable. And allaboutsymbian.com and also into mobile.com. Joining us from there, Stefan. Luckily, we've not mentioned the fact that he was recording this in the toilet. Thank you for joining us, Stefan.
I'm out of toilet paper, Ewan.
Well, that's not a problem. Just use your hand and work it out. Big thanks to Steve Litchfield, as always, managing to go through an entire show without mentioning Hawkwind once.
It's not you that mentions it when I'm not on.
Yeah, well, there is that. And, of course, there's Rafe, the only man who can turn a Yahoo service into a pirate galleon with Flick. Oh, I don't get a thank you from Rafe. Okay, that's me, Ewan Spence, who is no way lusting after the good old days when PDAs ran 30 hours and two AAA batteries, to say goodnight, God bless, thank you very much.